You're listening to Something Beautiful, part of the Emergent Podcast Network. For more information about this and other great shows, visit us online at www.emergentpodcast.com.
Want to hear from you? Email us at somethingbeautifulpodcast@gmail.com.
Everyone, and welcome to the Something Beautiful podcast. This is episode 2.15, and this week we will get the second part of Thomas's interview with Adele Sackler. Hope you managed to listen to the first part. It was a great conversation. And Adele picks up on some more stuff about her life, her sexuality, her battle with Lyme disease, and her thoughts on the Emergent Church. So looking forward to hearing all of that. And on the line with me today, by video, actually this time, which is slightly disconcerting, is Jonathan. Hi.
What was that I missed? You said something about something disconcerting. What was that?
Yeah, we're on video today. We don't usually see each other, so it's a bit odd.
Okay. I'm
not unpleasant.
I thought maybe you were talking about me personally or something. I mean, yeah, seeing me on video, I guess, would be unpleasant.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, you did mention there at the beginning that Thomas interviewed Adele. I think we may have misquoted that. I think Adele might interview Thomas. I think that's what happened.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell, isn't it? It's about 50-50. It's a conversation.
It is a conversation, that's for sure. Two friends sitting over a drink of coffee and Skype. So, great conversation. It's been good to hear some of the feedback from the last week. People on Twitter and so forth. And I got a message from one or two people via Facebook said that they really enjoyed the podcast. And so that's been good to see that people have been really appreciative and enjoying it. And I think they'll enjoy the second half of the podcast as well. So, what's been going on with you?
Yeah. Well, it's Holy Week, so that tends to coincide with our schools being on holiday. So the kids are here, and we've been off visiting my sister in the north of Scotland. And luckily for me, my brother-in-law is the manager of a distillery. And so we've been living in the grounds of a whiskey-making place. How bad can that be?
So you're at a Scottish whiskey distillery.
Yep, I was. I'm not now. I'm back home now, unfortunately. But I spent the last 3 days.
Why are we just now finding out about this connection? Why are you not sending Scottish whiskey to Texas?
I'm sure we can set you up a reasonable exchange rate.
Knowing our postal system, it will never make it here.
Yeah, well, I think John was discovering that, noticed on Twitter today. He had posted something to the States, which the US Postal Service had sent back to him. And it cost him £70, I think, to post it. So he was very unhappy.
Oh, I bet. That's no good whatsoever. So, speaking of Holy Week, I don't know if any of our listeners caught it or not, but listened to Tony Jones speak at Baylor on Monday. Of course, Baylor's about an hour south of here. He had some really cool points. I would encourage people to check that out. Was really good talking about the miracles of Jesus and how so many times we think that the miracles of Jesus are all about showing God's divinity, and that that's what they're there for, to show that, oh, well, he's God because he can make people, blind people see, and he can raise people from the dead and so on and so forth. But he really struck home a point that I had not really considered before, and that was that the miracles that Jesus did were more about bringing people into the temple and allowing them to come into the kingdom of God, not just healing their physical being. Because when you think about the woman who was hemorrhaging for most of her life, well, naturally, because of that, she couldn't go into the temple. When Jesus healed her, suddenly she was welcome into the temple. When you look at the lepers, they're sent out from among the camp, as the Old Testament tells us, or out of the city. You know, they're sent out. The demon-possessed people are sent out. But all of a sudden, Jesus is showing up, and he's healing their physical needs so that they can come closer and have a relationship in the temple with God. And he's saying none of that stuff is going to keep people out anymore.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. And I really like the idea that most of Jesus' miracles that we read about are about restoring people to community. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that for me is the power of Adele's story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her chat this week talks about how she finds community, even though her illness makes that really difficult sometimes, and how she finds community even though, you know, people tell her that her sexuality is wrong or sinful or whatever people might say about that. And I think, you know, that really sums up for me a lot of what Jesus was about. He spent a lot of time restoring people to community and helping people to get on with each other, you know, whether that was through a miracle or just through telling people to get it together and, you know, stop judging other people or, you know, whatever it might have been.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't help but think of Adele's story when he was talking about that and thinking that the kingdom of God is about restoring people to God, no matter what their infirmity, no matter what their differences. It's all about bringing people back to God and reconciling them to that. Well, let's hear this second half of this interview between Adele and Thomas, or this conversation. It's probably better to put it. And we'll chat a little bit about it as once they get done.
Even though Mark Driscoll curses from his pulpit when he hears us say it, you're listening to the Something Beautiful podcast, part of the Emergent Podcasting Network.
Well, I like how Pete Rollins says, you know, you meet someone and you're noticing the color of their eyes. You're not really listening to them in the conversation. But when you don't pay attention to the color of their eyes, and you're really listening. That means you're really listening. You're really listening to the words the other person's saying. You get beyond that. And that's so important. I think we only listen to a surface level a lot of times. And that's really what I've appreciated about the emerging conversation or emergent church is it has a range of people, a range of beliefs, but it really has been a place that people can question, that they can think out loud, doubt. And that's been enriching to my relationship with God and my faith. And I've really learned and love and appreciate it. Although it's not perfect. Nobody or no structure is perfect.
Yes, completely agree. So, coming back to the point, you're at you're doing the communication, you're doing that sort of journalism thing, and you move to LA. You've been through some of the counselling, you've been through the pray away the gay kind of thing. So there's this dual personality kind of there. There's this sort of evangelical, capital E evangelical type person, and there's this sort of, the homosexual that's there as well. And there's this toing and froing, there's this battle, this dichotomy that's going on between the two of you. And so you move to LA. This is where the dichotomy comes to a head. You're literally living a Jekyll and Hyde existence.
Yes, and it was in so many ways it was so hard, but in so many ways it was like I found in the gay community camaraderie, acceptance, a lot of times more so than in Christian community. Mm-hmm. Although I had some fabulous Christian friends out there. And then I was trying to go through counseling, and I tried to say, well, okay, I've worked through these issues. I came to a point where I said, okay, I've worked through this. I'm not dealing with these same sex attractions, but I think I was repressing because I really was, but I was trying to put on a face and live a good Christian life. And I was trying to put it out there, and I would talk to some of my closer Christian friends about my struggles. And so then I quit going to the bars for a long time. But then it would resurface again. It would never go away, Thomas. It just never would go away. As much as I prayed, as much as I went to counseling, as much as I talked about it, it just would not go away. And that's where I finally said, God, you got to have to show me something. And I'm going into YWAM, and I'm going to try to do this. I want you to show me if being gay is wrong. Mm-hmm. And even in YWAM, I tried to, I was honest with people about my struggle and that I, think I've dealt with this, but in reality I hadn't. I was fooling myself. Mm-hmm. And so when I came back from YWAM, living in Northern Ireland for 2 years, and I was really sick, that's when I really had a lot of time to do a lot of soul searching. Mm-hmm. And thinking and praying and reading. And I would read likes of like Marcus Borg and John Shelby Spong, who, are very on the liberal side, but I had enlightening from scripture for the first time that I had really never looked into. I'd heard from other people, but I started studying and started looking at the scripture again for myself and seeking counseling from a couple friends who are Episcopal priests. And I mean, this was a long process, but over coming home from Northern Ireland in 2004, and I came out in 2007. So, three years there, of soul searching. So it wasn't just a quick decision,
No, it's not. It's not been the heat of the moment kind of, this is something that's more ingrained.
Yes. And I thought, well, can I reconcile? Because I used to say, well, God's not approving of me being gay, but I'm doing it anyways. But where I finally came to the circle that God embraces me and loves me. Yes. And I look at it as a gift from God. I wouldn't choose to be gay, mm-hmm. but I look at it as a gift. And my being gay is not all that makes up my entire identity any more than a blogger does not make up my entire identity, or that I'm a photographer. All these things make up who I am, and it's one aspect of who I am.
Yes.
So it doesn't define me. So
I am very much of the opinion that the Lord gives us the the passions and the things that define us, these elements that make up the Lego bricks of our life, as things that he can use as opportunities. The fact that I'm a Star Wars geek, for example, allows me to connect with other Star Wars geeks in a manner that is quite incarnational, because I can be in the community but be different from that community and be there to help those and the thing about it is I don't define myself as being a Star Wars geek, but it's one part of the overall makeup of the diversity that makes me unique. And I think, if we look in these terms, if we look at as these things, that they provide us opportunities for the Lord to work and the Lord to show his transformative power, I think that's extremely important.
And I think a lot of conservative or religious right-wing fundamentalists, whatever, not to generalize, it's hard, you don't want to generalize because not everybody is in that, you can't put a name to everybody, but
yes.
But those who hold their fundamentals of faith so tightly that disagree with me, they are so, I just wrote a piece for The Ooze, but they're sex crazed because they're concerned about my sex life, what I'm doing, when, there's more to my relationship with my partner than sex. Yes, that's an integral part of any relationship, but we have the same ups and downs that, say, you and Ollie have.
Yes.
You have to pay bills. There's financial constraints. There's taking the trash out. There's doing dishes. There's cleaning the house. All these things that any couple have to go through. We pray for one another. We get sick. We take care of one another. We get depressed. You know what I'm saying? And
yes,
but they're so they're so focused on behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, instead of looking to see how, we are, I'm challenged by her every day in good ways, mm-hmm. that make me want to be a better person.
Yes. And I think that's the wonderful nature of a good, strong relationship, because, when Ollie comes in and she's had a brilliant day at work and she's telling me about somebody that she's met or somebody that did something at the community lunch club that she works in, it makes me jealous. I have to be honest. It makes me jealous. It makes me envious of having that relationship. But then I can talk about some of the stuff that I had in work today. The fact that, I'm prepared to listen as somebody goes and talks about how his relationship with his girlfriend's exploded and died. And you think, wow, I'm here, I'm meant to be here. And I think that's, it's all these challenges that we all bring to the table. And I think you're right. I think there is this obsession with sex. And I think the other thing, the point out is I think I think it was Trucker Frank that used this analogy of a pool of sharks that are all bleeding. And all these sharks are all bleeding, but they attack others. They attack other sharks. They attack the shark that's bleeding the most, so as a means of defending themselves from attack. And I think people are out to pick on what I would say is to be the marginalised, the fringe, the minority. And I mean that in a respectful manner, picking on those that are different from us so that they themselves are not picked on. They themselves are not challenged. And you look at things like, adultery and divorce and all these kind of things that are mentioned in the Bible, but those are kept quiet. We don't talk about these. We're very, very accepting of people in these situations, and quite rightly so that we should. But yet we pick on those people that are in the minority, those people that are different, those people that challenge the status quo. And for me, that is not what the Lord wants us to do. That for me is abhorrent. That's the abomination. That's the abomination that offends me. So Northern Ireland, just coming back to Northern Ireland there. Obviously Northern Ireland, you're talking about when? Is that early 2000? Was that before September 11? Or
no, I came over 2002, right. September 2002, and I was there for 2 years.
So
I did
I'm trying to think, when, my history isn't good, but the Troubles, I think the Troubles, were they over by that point?
They were pretty much over, yeah. There were still little pockets of stuff going on while I was there, but it was nothing like in the times before I came, so.
Because, being in Glasgow, being in the central belt of Scotland, you know, I really felt for a lot of the stuff that was going on in Ireland. You know, it was very vivid, it was very real to us. Because, mm-hmm. you were dealing with, you know, Glasgow is based on the influx of sort of Catholics who came over from things like the potato famine and stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, so that whole Irish contingent is very, very real to us. And I have so many sort of friends that are of an Irish descent I just love to bits. And, you know, the whole Glasgow Celtic Football Club is part of that whole tradition. So, you know, being in the west of Scotland is very real to us, very real to us in that sense. So you were over there, in essence, acting what is a missionary? Was it a youth worker missionary or just being?
Yeah, I did YWAM, which is Youth with a Mission, does a discipleship training school, and you take classes. You have a speaker comes in every week, and they speak on a subject. So that's how I met Pete Rollins. He came in and spoke on postmodern apologetics. And then we lived in community. And then we would, that was for 3 months, and then we would go on a 2-month outreach, which I went to Romania and worked with youth and children in Romania. And then I came back from my outreach and decided I wanted to come back on staff. So I had to go home to apply for a visa to come back, and I got it. And I was going to come back on staff for 2 years, and I completed a year of my requirement because I got really ill, so I had to go home. But in that time, I learned a lot about myself, and it planted even more seeds to the point of where I was coming to terms with my sexuality. And so when I came home, I still I started getting in touch with the doctor and got diagnosed with Lyme disease, and then started treatment for that. And So I'm still in treatment, mm-hmm. and it's just it's an awful disease. I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, because it just takes over your body and your immune system, and it's so hard to eradicate, and it's controversial on treatment plans. And so I'm kind of involved in advocacy for that. And so I've kind of got my, you know, finger in several different pots. Yeah, so, yeah. But yeah.
Coming back to the Lyme's disease, that's one of the things I think is wonderful about you. It's obviously the fact is obviously you use the times that you're up and you're about and you can to communicate and to reach out to people online, and even if it is means that you just can't get out of bed, at least you're still there, you're still communicating, and you know, it's just wonderful. Twitter, as we mentioned, just is such a wonderful thing, and you're just so vibrant a person as part of that community that's there. But the one thing that I've always held you with high regard is that I knew absolutely nothing about Lyme's disease before I found out that you had it. You know, I had absolutely no idea what it was whatsoever, but then you act as such a wonderful, positive advocate for the condition. And let's be honest, it's not a pretty thing. It's, you know, there's times when you are, it's obvious from what you say that you are in a lot of pain, you're in a lot of distress, but you act as such a wonderful advocate. And I think that that's God glorifying. I'll be honest and say that while I wouldn't want the disease on my worst enemy, I would definitely want your approach to the disease, if you know what I mean, the way that you've been a real advocate for it.
Oh, well, thanks, Thomas. That's the funny thing. Like, you were to meet me in person, it was like, I don't look sick, you know, and I just don't like to I like to talk about it in the sense that I like to educate people, and I want to be honest with people with how I'm doing or what I'm feeling. But then, you know, I don't want to focus on it all the time. So I don't talk about it a lot. And a lot of times, like this weekend with Pete being here, I prepared all week to, you know, put my energy together. And then it was a crazy weekend. And then, you know, then I went up for treatment on Tuesday, yesterday. So now I'm just kind of, all that I saved my energy for is just kind of all kaput. You know what I mean? I'm
I imagined you when you were getting ready for Pete. It was like, you know, the sequence with, you know, Rocky in the original Rocky movie, where he's doing all the various exercises and he's running all the way up to Philadelphia and he's running up the steps. That was you preparing for Pete coming.
And it was, you know, and I told him he was like such a sunshine in my cloudy life. You know, it was, I was so excited about it. And because he has been, his writings and everything have been such a big impact in my life and in this emerging conversation and rethinking how I hold my beliefs, you know, and how I see God. And so I have not yet arrived, and I don't think I ever will. I don't think any of us do, but I tell you, it's been a fascinating journey, and I am blessed by the people that have come into my life, including you.
Thank you. And the one thing is after being in the Something Beautiful podcast, you'll probably get to meet a number of different people, a number of listeners will hook up with you because they'll be so inspired by your story. And you, the one of the wonderful things is the way that you've connected with the, you know, my friends, that you've connected with the, you know, we have this wee community on Twitter, and you're connecting with some of you know, the people that I knew that introduced to everybody. And I just think that's wonderful. I just think that's it's great how everybody's interconnecting and everybody's able to
it's fantastic. Encourage, they're incredible people and unique, and I love and when I'm not on, I miss everybody. And I love how you initiated the Hint of Bergamot photo blog. That's been incredible and has been a great place for me to express some creativity. And it's beautiful, Thomas. It really is. I consider my torch folks my community of faith right now.
Wow.
So
that's a real humbling statement to make for me, to hear that. It's just... this really humbling, but yeah, and I think you're right. I think the people that we connect with on a regular, daily basis are just some wonderful, open, inclusive, just really genuinely wonderful folk. And I'm really blessed to be part of that. I just love the fact that, you know, you say about the Hint of Bergamot. I just love the idea that I had this idea put out there, and just so many people just got behind it and just pushed it forward. It's just testament to the community. It's not me. It's a team effort. It's everybody. It's everybody coming together. And just as much as if somebody else had an idea and we would all jump behind that, I think that's one of the wonderful, wonderful things that's there. So, but just as a slightly more serious, you know, and saying that it's your faith community is a real honour to me in that. But do you miss... sort of that sort of offline kind of that sort of church community? Because some of the points in your life, and there's always been this sense of camaraderie, this sense of community from early on, from the Catholic school, you know, even to the time when you were over in LA with your, you know, in the gay clubs, and or even with youth with a mission, you know, there's that sense of camaraderie there and that thing that kept you going. And is that something you miss? Is that something that you maybe yearn for, that you're looking for?
Yeah, sometimes I do. I really, even though it was short, I haven't been able to find anything since my time at ICON in Belfast, Pete Rollins community. And, you know, again, it's not perfect, but I've not experienced anything since that. And I hope that I can find something like that, or, you know, my partner says, well, we may just have to start something like that here in the States. And, you know, I'm totally open to that. You know, we're hoping to move back to California sometime later this year. So I do yearn for that. I have my friends, you know, here in Richmond, and we have great times together, but they're not spiritually connected in the sense that I am in this conversation. Mm-hmm. So I have a few other friends that are, and we meet and we talk, but I do yearn for that space. I do. And I think it's important, but I think it's also okay that it's not happening right now. I think people get caught up and think, oh, I have to go to church every Sunday, you know, or whenever it is, and it becomes the thing to do. And I think that it's okay. I'm okay with that. Yeah. So
at the end of the day, church is who we are, not where we go.
Exactly.
And I think the thing is that if you get the sort of camaraderie in the community that you need through online sources or through other channels. Well, great. You know, that is wonderful. And I think, you know, certainly some of the issues that I have at the moment, certainly my life, and it's certainly not about me, but some of the issues I've got is because of the physical church, not because of the continuity that I have or the community that I have online.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think that we maybe put an emphasis on, oh, we need to be. And it was something that Andrew Jones spoke about is how he talks in his journey about moving from something that faith was all about doing to something that faith was. It was about his character, and the actions came out of his character. And I think that's very much the same with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And even my friends who aren't Christians or have been burned by Christianity, we do life together. You know, we look out after one another when someone's sick. We have dinner together. You know, we love to entertain in our home, so we love to have people over for dinner or a night of board games or whatever. And so we do life together. We do things together, like go to movies or we go out and ride bikes or whatever it is. And to me, sometimes I think people think that, oh, going to church is it, and that's how you do it. But I think when you do life with people, you know, that's being the church.
And the thing about it is that that's some of the same themes that Mark Berry spoke about when I had the chat with him last week. It's very much about that being, doing life together. You know, it's not just about being in, you know, it's about not just about being in community, but actually sharing the life, sharing the ups and downs. That's what makes it so deep and so strong.
Yeah. And dealing and how you deal with conflicts when they arise, you know, and how you work through that and talk through those things. And that's happening in my friends, you know. So I think that is that is what I cherish.
Excellent. So the only question I've got now for you, Adele, is what next? You mentioned moving back to California. You know, you've got the successful queer emergence sort of thing going on. You're still blogging away and keeping us posted with some of the you know, the LBT. When you talk about the LBT, that sort of anagram, acronym for the lesbian, you know, gay, bisexual community. I was trying to work this out. See, the thing is for me, I would have had it sort of alphabetical, but then I think it would come out as like, it would almost like be like BGLTQ, and then it would sound like it was like this sort of homosexual sandwich, because it was the bacon gay lesbian, the bacon gay lettuce tomato, you know, and it just wouldn't sound right, you know, so...
I think it gets, I don't know, it started out as GLBT, and then they switched the L and the G, so the lesbian would come first, and then some people add...
Women first, you know, always.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've done, and then the Q is for queer questioning, and there's even disagreements amongst in the community, so, you know, you never please everybody all the time, you're always going to offend someone.
But at least the thing is I have to be honest and say that I'm so delighted that you're a voice in that community. That not only are you representing that community to myself, to others that will follow your blog, or to, you know, as and when that you can, you know, that you comment on other blogs and you reach out to people, you represent that community. But also the fact is that you're in that community and you're saying to that community, look, God doesn't hate you. You know, there are Christians that don't hate you, that, you know, just because, that, you know, there isn't just one view of Christianity. And that for me is, I find that very reassuring, to be honest.
Oh, thank you. I agree, because I think for so long I thought God hated me, Thomas. I mean, I went through a period where I was suicidal. I tried killing myself. I spent time in a Christian program in a psychiatric hospital for a month at a time, two different times, because I thought God hated me, and I wasn't changing. Nothing was changing. So that's the kind of message that was being taught to me, you know, in fundamentalist Christianity. And I don't think God wants that. And It saddens me. And so I hope I can be a voice to other gay people that God does love them. And, but as for what's next, well, I keep blogging, and I've gotten, a great number of people who are grateful for Queermergent and some great people contributing. So I don't have to keep up trying to write something every week. Mm-hmm. And, I'm trying, if I can, get my thoughts together. I really would like to, try to write my memoir. I've got several people saying that, you know, encourage me that I ought to do that. I have an interesting story to tell. So, and then also I have another friend who just, it's in the early stages. He's going to be pitching an idea for a book, commenting, having my perspective, and then a person who's ex-gay, who doesn't consider themselves gay anymore, Christian, and we both comment on chapters. And then I've also been asked to be a part of putting together a book on queer emergent theology. So those are kind of the things that are cooking right now.
I see.
Yeah, I tell you, doors have just seemed to open up for me this year, you know. And I've been on, I was on a podcast interview with these two great guys, at a site called Irreligiosophy. They're former Mormons, and they're now atheists. And they interviewed me and a friend. And so it's just like all these opportunities just keep opening for me. So that's when I say, okay, that's the sense to me that I'm kind of going in the right direction with God. You know, that's how I feel. So.
Well, I know for a fact that God is using you. That your voice is out there and it's being heard, and there's people like me that's listening, and there's others that are certainly listening. And I think looking, you know, at some of those things about the books, and you know, I think the whole queer emergent thing is, you know, you're such an important voice in that, and I would really welcome your voice and your sort of perspective and your character in these ways, because I think it's so important to have, you know, people that are displaying the kind of sort of values that you're displaying, that kind of, you know, okay, let's agree to disagree, let's look at the diversity, let's look at unity and diversity, these kind of ideas. And I certainly would welcome that. Although I have to say, with your memoirs, make sure that you have a huge chapter about me, because you know my fragile ego just wouldn't be able to cope if you only gave me a wee footnote mention. You know what I mean? Yeah, and then I met that nutter from Scotland, and yeah, the best we say, you know, the less we say about that, the better, because you know that would just upset my fragile ego, and you know.
Okay, I will remember that. Note to self, right here.
Well, to be fair, Adele, and just in closing, I think it's appropriate at that point we would say, just to close this conversation and this the recording for the Something Beautiful podcast. Adele, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you, and I really look forward to what God will do with you in the future. I look forward to these books. I look forward to some of the things you're doing. It's just wonderful to be able to speak with you and to hear your story and what a wonderful story it is. So with that, I would genuinely like to say thank you for your time, thank you for your willingness to take part in the podcast. And as I say to anybody, have you got any final shout outs? Is there anybody you want to say shout out to before we press stop on the old record?
Well, I'd like to thank you for this, and say hello to Ollie for me.
Will do.
And I think I heard Pippin barking in the background before.
Yes, my in-laws, the in-laws are in. They're going to be showing. My father-in-law comes and teaches Miriam how to play her French. She's got a horn. She plays part of the Salvation Army band. So my father-in-law comes to teach her that. So I think they're playing that somewhere downstairs. But Pippin,
well, that's great.
Pippin's been about, and thankfully Dana and Miriam haven't popped in. They usually pop in to ask me stuff when I'm on call. So they're about as well. But no, thank you.
Thank you, and Jonathan Blundell, for you guys doing this podcast. It's awesome. And thank you. I feel honored that you wanted to interview me, and I appreciate the time.
Well, I'm looking forward to the potential in the future. Maybe if you're about or you have contacts and you maybe want to do the odd wee podcast for us or speak to people or co-host or, you know, do a wee segment here and there. Well, you know, who knows? I think that you've got a lot to add to this conversation. So, you know, I should probably have spoken to JD and Stuart in advance of that. But hey, you know, I'm impetuous.
I know, you're like me, you just go for it.
Yeah.
And I also want to thank you for speaking clearly Queen's English to me. Thank you.
Yes, well, you were concerned that I was going to talk all Scots, you know, but then... How can you be so worried about that, coming from the fact that you lived for 2 years in Belfast?
I know, but I still would be like, huh, can you repeat yourself?
Brilliant. Well, at that point then, I'm going to press stop. It has been a real pleasure to speak with you, and I look forward to all the things that God has got for you in the future.
Amen, and for you too.
Thank you, Adele.
Thank you.
Wanna take my faith one breath at a time. Wanna take my faith one breath at a time. Pump up my soul with the Spirit of God, preaching tolerance, practicing love. Wanna take my faith one breath at a time. Wanna give my love one stretch at a time. Wanna give my love one stretch at a time. Soothing pain with hands of grace, strengthening justice, spreading peace. Wanna give my love one stretch at a time. For the rich, care for the poor, care for the stranger knocking at the door. I wanna care for myself and everybody else. I wanna care for the rich, care for the poor, care for the stranger knocking at the door. I wanna care for myself and everybody else. I wanna make one step at a time. Wanna make my way one step at a time. Put one foot in front of the other, hand in hand, sister and brother. Wanna make my way one step at a time. I wanna care for the rich, care for the poor, care for the stranger knocking at the door. I wanna care for myself and everybody else. Wanna care for the rich, care for the poor, care for the stranger knocking at the door. I wanna care for myself and everybody else.
Dave Andrews on the Something Beautiful podcast. Right before that, we had the conversation between Thomas and Adele, and wrapping up that conversation. And some very good stuff there, Stuart. Anything stand out to you in the chat?
Yeah, absolutely. I liked the idea that Adele was talking about her sexuality doesn't define her. And for me, it's not a new thing to hear said, but I think for someone who's as vocal about her sexuality as Adele is, that might be difficult for some people to hear. You know, that in some ways she does define herself by her sexuality, but in other ways, yeah, I can absolutely understand what she was saying. You know, that she, because she campaigns, because she's vocal, because she puts herself out there, you know, it's easy for people to define her in that way, because that's the only part of her perhaps that they see. And yet, when Thomas spoke to her, we find that like everybody else, she has lots of different parts to her life, and that, you know, sexuality is only one part of that, and it really doesn't define her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. That was something that grabbed me, and I mean, she says that even though being gay is a part of her life, it definitely doesn't make up all of who she is. Just like being a blogger doesn't make up all of who you are, being a podcaster, or, you know, was it Mark Berry, a scooter? I mean, that it's a part of them, but it doesn't totally define someone. Hmm. And I think that as Christians, we tend to, and I don't, maybe not even Christians either, but as people, we tend to find those labels, and we really like to stick those labels on people and define people, whether it's gay or straight or, you know, alcoholic or adulterer or someone, you know, addicted to whatever sin it might be, a druggie. I mean, we always want to slap those labels on people, and we always try to define other people with our labels, when there's really, if you stop and listen to someone's story and stop to take the time to understand them, you realize there is a whole lot more to them. Now, I'm curious, we kind of talked about this before we actually started the show, but how would you, I mean, how would you define yourself, Stuart? Or do you?
I guess, you know, it's I try not to. It's a great big long list. You know, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a brother, a son, an uncle, a nephew. But I'm I'm a youth worker, I'm a preacher on occasion, I'm a blogger, I'm a podcaster, I'm a Motherwell fan, I even like the Yankees occasionally. I don't know if you're allowed to say we'll lose 5,000 listeners now. Sorry, I don't mean that.
Any Texas Ranger
fans
have just tuned you out.
Any other fans of baseball at all? Support Manchester United here, it's the same thing. Yeah, I understand. Anyone but the Yankees. But yeah, you know, I guess you're right. You know, that list is as long as or as short as you want. You know, I could be, you know, a middle-aged guy who's losing far too much of his hair, but, you know, or I could be a guy that wears glasses, or, you know, how do you define yourself in, mm-hmm. in such limited terms? You know, I would like to say that I'm a Christian, but, you know, people would probably argue with that. You know, people would take even that and say, well, you know, I'm sorry, but you don't live up to my ideal of a Christian, because, you know, I've done some pretty bad things in my life. I've done things I'm not proud of, just like we all have. But I would hate to think that those labels are going to be how I'm defined.
Right.
I'd hate to be defined by what I've done rather than what I am.
Right. And I think that's one of the things that I dislike about social media sometimes, is that you always have to put a bio or an about me on there, and I'm kind of like, I hate to define myself in any type of box with any type of one or two labels. But, you know, I probably could come up with one or two labels that I would say this defines Stuart to me. I could come up with one or two labels that defines my mm-hmm. wife. We can always come up with labels for others, but we don't like labels being put on us. And I think maybe if we flip that around, we'd have a whole lot more understanding. We'd have a whole lot more love, that we wouldn't be putting those stickers and labels on people. We'd start looking at, well, this is a human being made in the image of God, and we're called to love them.
Yeah. I'm sure Jesus said something about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's something about judging people somewhere.
Yeah. I think it's somewhere in the back of the book or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's near the back.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I did think kind of on that same topic. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it just shows you that I think one of the things that always intrigues me about the Bible is that, you know, when we look at what was happening with Moses, and then we look at what was happening with Jesus, you know, hundreds of years later, and then we look at what's happening now, being a human hasn't changed a whole lot. You know, that we get the same things wrong, we get the you know, and you know, that's what Jesus came into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he came into that, you know, knowing what humanity is about, you know, and wanting to, I think, to redeem that in some way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that gives me great hope, I think, that, you know, and I guess it's why, you know, the Bible's such a rich resource for us, that, you know, it's the story of humanity, and so it's our own story as much as it's the story of God.
Mm-hmm.
And there's loads to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what we like to do is make the same mistakes over and over again. You know, we don't learn.
Mm-hmm. And I think, kind of going along with that, I love that she brings out the point, and again, it's like you mentioned, it's something we've heard before, but maybe not take notice of. But she makes the point that, hey, there's a lot more to my relationship with my wife than just the sexual aspect. Because we define and we label and we throw those terms around loosely, we always look at the sexual side of the relationship. But they have a great relationship. They have a beautiful relationship. They're supportive of one another. I would hate to think that someone defines my relationship with my wife based on our sexual tendencies or whatever. You know, I want people to look at the whole package and see that it's two people that love one another. I would much rather be defined by that than just what happens in our bedroom.
Yeah, and I want to know how people know what happens in your bedroom. You know, we make all kinds of assumptions.
Right.
But we do. Because someone's gay, we assume loads about, you know, their sex life, if you like, in a way that we probably don't about straight people. Why, you know, why is that? Is it because we don't understand, as, you know, I'm saying we, as in straight people, don't understand what homosexual people do in their sex life, and so we make up loads of stories and I guess exaggerate out of all control. And you know, we do, Adele said in the piece, you know, we seem to be obsessed by sex, you know, and I think, I'm not sure that fits only to a more conservative viewpoint. I think as a, you know, society, we're obsessed by sex, whether that's, you know, we don't want people to do it, or, you know, there's too much of it, you know, in the media or whatever it is. You know, we're a very sexualized society, and I guess it's really easy for us to focus on that part because it's so apparent.
Mm-hmm.
In the world. But I it's not something, you know, I'm like you. I'd hate for people to define me and my relationship with Avril, you know, on that one thing. I mean, that just seems ridiculous, and yet that's what we do.
Yep.
To other people. You know, why do we do that?
I don't know.
Because we miss so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do, don't we?
Yeah, we definitely miss.
Going back to judging people, that's the plank, isn't it? You know, that's the plank in our eyes. We can't see past. And if we can't see past that, how do we see the whole person? How do we see that relationship? How do we see how they relate with the community? How do we see all the gifts that they bring? How do we see God in them if we can't see past that one part that we blow out of all proportion?
Mm-hmm. And think of...
Check me, there's a sermon in there, son.
There might, you might get up on a, be able to get up on a mount and do a sermon on some sort of mount. I heard it's been something like that's been done before. I don't know. Well, very good. And I really appreciate Adele and what she had to say and what she's doing. And I really appreciate that one of the things she said in closing or near the end was that she's lived a homosexual life. She struggled with the duality of being a Christian and a homosexual. And she's come to peace with that. And she's come to peace with the idea that God loves her despite her sexuality, or I don't want to say despite, like it's, I think that's the wrong word. My mind's not thinking of the correct one right now, but God loves her regardless. And she's come to understand that. And I love that she says, you know, she hopes to be a voice to those living in the gay lifestyle that God can still love you and God still does love you. And I love that she's that voice, not only to the homosexual community, but as Thomas mentioned last week, you know, people with Lyme disease. She can still be a voice that God still loves you. To the people in her hometown, she can still be a voice to those that say, hey, God still loves you. You know, she's taking her scuba diving classes. That's another opportunity for her to be a voice to say, God still loves you. And I love that she wants to be that voice. And I think that we can all learn from that. We can all learn from no matter where we are, no matter what, you know, labels people may put on us, God is still a God who loves us, and God is still a God that loves our neighbors, no matter what labels they may have on them as well. So a lot of great lessons from Adele, and we definitely appreciate her spending some time talking with Thomas, and appreciate Thomas for getting the conversation together and chatting with her as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and looking forward to some interviews from Adele with some other people. I heard Thomas signing her up there, and she didn't say no.
I know that she has at least one interview in the can. We just got to figure out the tech side of getting the audio to us, because I think she had some trouble with the recording. The recording is about a gig in size, and to transfer it, we need it to be about a tenth of that. So hopefully we can figure out a way to get that audio from her, because looking forward to that interview. Speaking of interviews, next week we will have Eric Bryant on the show, the author of Peppermint-Filled Pinatas. Looking forward to that. He's one of the pastors on staff at Mosaic in L.A., and so that's been waiting. And he's definitely a great story there, a great read on that book, and so looking forward to sharing that interview. Also, we have Ben Thomas from the band So Elated. That's coming up the following week. So a couple more interviews coming up, and a couple more great stories that we're looking forward to sharing.
Yeah, good stuff.
And if you have a story that you would like to share or that you think we should share on the Something Beautiful podcast, be sure to drop us an email. The email is somethingbeautifulpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can always reach us on Skype. The Skype address is J.D. Blundell, or our listener line anywhere. You can call in. It's 972-535-8980, 972-535-8980. And I know all of you iPhone fans out there already have Skype on your iPhones. So as you're listening to this on your iPhone, go ahead and plug in that phone number or the Skype address, J.D. Blundell. Stuart's showing off his iPhone there. And I'm going to show off my BlackBerry, because you were griping about your iPhone for a while that you were having trouble with email and so forth.
Yeah.
But be sure that you get that written down, and let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you thought about Adele, or any other topics that you'd like to hear us discuss, or things that you've heard here or there on the show.
Okay. Good deal. Thanks, Jonathan. Always good to speak to you.
You too, and thanks for chatting today, and thanks to Thomas and Adele again for all that they're doing. I like the video, because I can
make go Yankees.
Crazy faces at you.
I didn't realize you were.
All right, well, everyone, have a great week, and we'll catch you next week on the Something Beautiful podcast, Stories Worth Talking About.
Happy Easter.
Maybe not the best idea, but I'm a country boy. I got to have a fire every once in a while. So we were sitting around the fire, and we wrote this song. If you know it, you can jump right in, because I'm not a good singer, so help me out. It goes like this. Come now and join the feast, from the greatest to the very least. Oh, come now and join the feast, right here in the belly of the beast. It's kind of sassy. So now if you just learned it, you'll catch on. So come on, let's try it. Come now and join the feast, from the greatest to the very least. Oh, come now and join the feast, right here in the belly of the beast. So cops and soldiers, you can come too. Just lay down your guns and come on through. Rich people, get rid of your stuff, and poor people, there will be enough. Come now and join the feast, from the greatest to the very least. Oh, come now and join the feast, right here in the belly of the beast. Oh, mighty ones, come down from your thrones, and little ones, you are not alone. Oh, patriots, you can bring your flags, wash and feed, and we'll need some rags. All right, come on. Come now and join the feast. From the greatest to the very least, so come now and join the feast, right here in the belly of the beast. All right, that's fine. Give yourself a hand.
Thanks for listening to the Something Beautiful podcast. Join us again next week at somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.